I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Joining us now, Alex Hollings.
Alex, how's it going, man?
You know what? I've been worse in my life. You know, a lot of people can't say that, but I can. So I'm all right. How are you? How are you doing? How's your family doing?
I think that's a really, really good way to look at it. Things are going more or less well. My mom is still in quarantine, awaiting results for her test.
Oh, really?
I think in large part because we really ramped up testing, but we didn't really ramp up the lab infrastructure that surrounds it. So there's a big backlog on tests that people are waiting for results on. So we're hoping that we'll get my mom's results by the end of the week. This week is what we're being told now. So she's in quarantine until then, but doing well. But doing really well so far.
Does she have underlying health issues that would cause?
She does. Okay. Yeah, I mean, she kind of fits into a number of categories for testing. She's an infection control nurse, you know, which is how she was exposed. And, but also she's got some underlying health issues and she's in her mid-60s. But like I said, you know, she's still doing very, very well. She had a slight fever for a little bit there, but I think that she may well be just fine. And we probably wouldn't have noticed the fever if we weren't paying such close attention. You know what I mean?
Right.
We had a little bit of a scare over the weekend. My mom lives with my brother and his family, and my brother's wife almost ended up hospitalized with 102 fever over the weekend. But it turns out it's just a good old-fashioned regular being sick kind of case as opposed to being COVID-19, which we were worried that she may have gotten it from my mom. And so it was a hectic weekend, but I'm back to hoping for good news and keeping my fingers crossed now. Before we go any further, I really wanted to bring this up. You know, two weeks ago, we talked about a bunch of stuff. Mac and I have a habit of arguing and disagreeing, which is always cool. But I went a little overboard when we were arguing and disagreeing. And I know I already apologized to you and you accepted it, which I really appreciate.
You don't.
But, you know, the audience is the third member of this conversation. And, you know, I just wanted to say I really do apologize for getting too heated, for getting too personal about this. And, you know, it matters a lot to both of us, you know. And so I just wanted to apologize for anything that I said that was disrespectful last week to you and to the listeners, you know. But I think a lot of people's tempers are flaring, but that's still not an excuse, you know. So thanks for being such a big man about it, Mac. You know, when I reached out to you, you were like, don't even sweat it. But I still feel like I needed to say it. So thank you for being understanding, man.
No, it's and again, I think we both believe in the same thing. It's that we can talk about anything, right? As long as everybody keeps their cool, and sometimes it's not easy. So I appreciate it. We can't shut the economy off forever.
No, that's totally true.
Right.
You know?
I want to get your thoughts on this. If you look at the map of the United States, not every place is Washington or New York City, Seattle, right? Even Southern California is not in that, not there yet. And we shall see if it will get there. But, you know, there's people, I mean, you can't shut the economy down. So the question is, what do you do? I mean, hard decisions.
I think that I actually do have an answer for this.
Let me give you mine. And first of all, when you mobilize the National Guard in a state, for instance, in New York, you take the doctors out of certain hospitals.
Yes.
So to me, you can't do that. All right. You can mobilize the snuffies from the state, but you need to mobilize the doctors in West Virginia because there's virtually hardly any cases. West Virginia, was the last state to have a reported case. And all the low caseload states, you need to mobilize their doctors and bring them to New York. Okay, so less impacted states got to support more impacted states. Okay, so we got a surge in that direction. Next, right, more tests are becoming available, and more testing result places, right? People that actually put the test through, you know, more of those are coming online. But again, you cannot snap your fingers and get this shit done. It's just like, oh yeah, we want to make more respirators. Okay, that's fine. And GM wants to help. So does Tesla. Well, guess what? You've got to have, right, the assembly, right, machines, the parts, you know, you got to have the part line, you know, and those parts come from all over the world.
Chain. You're totally right.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's great to say, yeah, they want to do it, and I have the power to compel that, but it's not going to happen yesterday. I just saw where a hospital in Seattle said, look, we're going to make our own PPE, our personal protective equipment, right? Hoods and things like that. We need people that can cut and people that can sew and then people that can paste. Would you come to this site? They shut the whole thing off yesterday. Mm-hmm. We've got more than enough to last us for the next 6 months, right? And so to me, solutions like that. But again, cities that are not in states and regions, they're not, right, impacted substantially, they've got to look at letting the people that are least susceptible to this go back to work. Now, you still got to do social distancing, right? But they've got to allow that to happen because the death rates in those age groups are really small. And you can't keep everybody sitting at home, not making any money, shut the economy off. And so in the areas not impacted, those people have to be allowed to go back to work. The people that have underlying health issues and the elderly, they've got to still stay at home. Okay, so it has to be this, we call it in the Marine Corps, selective unmasking, right, when we have a gas attack. It's got to be that applied to the workforce slowly but surely. And then as we get more of these things that come online, you can then go from the unimpacted regions to the moderately impacted regions. And then when those numbers begin to come down, then you can get the truly impacted regions. So, and those are going to be tough decisions. And you're going to see stories that say, they let me go back to work and then I got it. And now, you know, or he got it and now he's dead. And there's going to be some with that. You can't take it down to fucking zero. Okay. You can't take it down to zero. So with that said, go ahead. What do you think? And give me your solution.
I think that your solution works in practice. We just have to do one thing first, which is I think the missing key to all of this is we really need to do a better job, a more effective job, and a broader job of testing. You know, my mom being a great example, we're 2 weeks into this now where we're waiting to find out if my mom has this. She's not only a high-risk person, but she's also a nurse, you know, that works in a nursing home. It's not that people aren't pushing these things through. It's not that we're not working hard. The problem is very much infrastructure. The way South Korea was able to go from things kind of getting out of hand to getting a grip on things was very much through broad testing of just about everybody. They tested thousands and thousands of people so they could right away start isolating those who were infected. They're obviously culturally different than us, but lean on a bit of that personal responsibility where if everybody in West Virginia has access to a test and we find out that there's maybe six people in West Virginia that has tested positive for this, then we can absolutely reallocate resources. We can absolutely reallocate personnel. But the risk that we run right now with reallocation without having broad testing in place is that we run the risk that in these states that seem to have smaller quantities, they may have more than it looks. That spread may end up even being faster without medical personnel there on site. We need to make sure that we've got the personnel there before things get out of hand, right? So the only way we can do that, the only way we can take doctors from West Virginia and send them to New York, the only way that we can take doctors from Montana and send them to California, is if we have broad and effective enough testing to know that things are under control in West Virginia or in Montana. You know, the Surgeon General was, you know, all over the news over the weekend saying this week is going to be bad. We're going to get a lot of bad news this week. I don't think that he necessarily means that the spread is going to be worse this week.
Right.
I think what he means is that we have a stockpile of tests pending results. And as those get processed, we're going to see far more infections, not because far more people are infected, but because we're processing those tests now, right? So I think that what we need to do, the focus right now really needs to be expanding our testing apparatus, just like you're saying, from the supply chain up. I don't just mean increasing testing, which is what we have done in the past few weeks.
Right.
The problem with increasing the testing without increasing the infrastructure is you get bottlenecks like we have now. So if we can find a way to resolve that bottleneck, if we can make testing, broad testing, available to a large portion of the United States, at that point, we really can nail this down. We really can go New York, California, Washington. These are the places that we need to really pool our resources to stop the spread of this from going further. However, we've been pretty slow moving, so there's a solid chance. I mean, we have confirmed cases in every state, right? There's a solid chance that those confirmed cases in every state can become the next epicenter, like New York is right now, if we don't do a good enough job, if epidemiologists aren't there on site to give good guidance, if we're not giving the nurses the stuff that they need, exactly what you're saying. Like, for instance, I know Donald Trump has gotten a lot of criticism for not using the War Powers Act to force the private industry to expand production of things like masks and stuff. But I would argue that he doesn't need to a large extent. The market supply and demand is a big part of capitalism, right? The market's aware that there is a huge demand for medical masks, for N95 masks, for gloves, for hoods, for scrubs. There's a huge demand for this. And the private sector, just like you're saying, is going to find ways to fill that demand. The only thing that I would say we need to be worried about, one of the few things that maybe I'll agree with Cuomo about in the long run, but we do need to be cognizant of price gouging. We need to be aware of the possibility that states could end up bidding against one another for some of these supplies.
Well, hell,
these
I mean,
are things that we need to stay on top of.
And it's an international market, right?
It really is, you know.
The world is bidding against each other. And to that end, you know, I heard somebody say, well, wait a minute. Why are we throwing these things away? Can't we figure out a way to sanitize them? And I thought, well, holy shit. I mean, you know, again, as you're saying, you know, the market provides its own solutions. Like, okay, look, all these things get thrown into this bin, right? If I have people that are masked up and gloved up and they're pulling this stuff out and there's a way that they could sanitize this, repackage it, and it works. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. And so that's a beautiful thing about capitalism. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's people working on all this shit. But again, one of the things I think about is when I hear this, and just to kind of back up what you said, Alex, is that the president can say, yeah, I have a wartime authority that I can compel manufacturers to do this. And then you start thinking about, okay, so they've got to get the machines. They've got to get the supplies, okay? And that's not going to happen, so...
And if that wartime authority doesn't extend to the supply chain,
right.
those corporations are still price gouged.
And even if it does, though, even if it does, how soon do you think you can get enough of these machines, all the parts there, a month, 2 months, and then your people trained on it, right? How long do you think that... It's not going to be 4 days. And so people, I mean... When you hear that, you're like, oh, you know, and then you had Elon Musk saying, yeah, we can turn two on it. Okay, when does the first mask or respirator
roll off the supply line,
roll
right?
off it in 6 weeks?
And well, that, this is where my frustration is born out of entirely for this whole thing. We, you know, we're maybe 2 weeks behind Italy, right, in terms of spread and stuff like that, which means we really should have started rolling these balls down the hill in January. And that's potentially what's going to be our – I really don't think anything here is going to be our undoing. America is going to be fine 12 months from now. Oh, the next 3 months are going to be hairy though, you know. And I do think that we – just like Max said, we're going to lose people. People are going to die. People have already died. You know, the point here, to quote Donald Trump, even though I'm not a big Donald Trump fan, but he's right. The point here is getting to the finish line with as few unneeded deaths as possible, right? Which means making decisions on the macro level. You know, I got into a debate over the weekend with a really good friend of mine, and he pointed out to me where I was like, I was arguing that people need to be making responsible decisions instead of the government telling us to, right? And he agrees with me there, but there's still a little bit of disagreement on what constitutes a responsible decision, right? A lot of Americans are still traveling. A lot of Americans are still grouping up on the beach and going to the movie theaters and stuff.
Right.
And to his point, he was saying economies are going to suffer. Economies, local economies are going to collapse if we maintain this social isolation, we maintain this social distancing practice. My argument, on the other hand, and I'll admit, partly informed by the fact that my mom's in quarantine because someone else didn't make a responsible decision, I think that the economic ramifications of not doing this stuff now, doing this stuff early, will be far worse than the short-term ramifications of closing stuff up for the most part for a few weeks. You know, if a lot of Americans, myself included, tend to focus on who's going to die. But the truth is that who's going to die will have a smaller probable effect on our economy in the long term than who gets sick and when, right? So if we have – I think it's entirely feasible that the CDC is correct. Ultimately, 100 million Americans are going to be infected with COVID-19. And to their point about flattening the curve, the idea isn't really to stop 100 million Americans from getting it. That's going to happen either way, right? The idea here is to slow that down so that we don't overwhelm basically the ICUs in our hospitals across the country. It's important for people to remember that Italy's health system – is in some ways better than America's. You know, in America, the average, like we average something like 2.3 ICU beds per 1,000 people in the American country, in America. Italy averages something like 3.2. They actually had more resources in place to start with per person, per capita than we did. It helps that there's a lot fewer people that live there. So we run the risk of overwhelming our hospital infrastructure if that 100 million gets sick over 6 weeks instead of 6 months, right? So when we're talking about flattening that curve, this is what we really need to do, is we need people not to wait until the government tells you that you have to. Let's not wait until, you know, the governor of New York or the governor of California issues you a shelter at home order. Make responsible decisions now. Continue to support your local economy. I've been ordering more takeout and delivery during this isolation period than I ever did before, because these people are counting on us to keep their bills paid too, right?
Right.
Make responsible decisions. Don't isolate yourself completely. But I really would encourage people, let's not demand that the government tell us what to do here. Because when the government does it, it's really difficult to make like a one statement order that fits well for 327 million people, right? Or by state, which I think is something Trump's doing well, which is if Trump gave a national shelter at home order, it would be poorly received. But if governors do it, the local municipalities that support that governor are going, it'll be an easier sell. But we need, as individuals, to be making good decisions now so that we can mitigate how bad this is going to be for our economy in the long run. And if you're saying right now to yourself, people are sick, how could you think about the economy?
Well, you have to.
They're one and the same. Yeah. You have to.
No,
if our economy can't support people getting better, it doesn't matter if they recover and end up homeless and die of pneumonia next year instead of COVID-19 this year.
Right.
You know.
You know, and one to that end, I mean, I think there's a middle point between, you know, you and your friend in that discussion, and that's this. Look, even for the parts of the country that are going to, and they will, are going to be able to say, okay, if you're within this age group and if you don't have any complicated, you know, history, you know, you're allowed to go back to work. Okay.
Which is something we're going to have to
do.
Right.
But you still have to practice social distancing.
Yes. Okay.
And so there's this kind of hybrid. So while we do this, we know that these are smart things to do until, you know, in theory, we get something, you know, I've learned this term prophylactic, this medical prophylactic, like the one that the president was talking about from France early last week, that showed some problems. So with an increase in testing, this treatment, if you will, not vaccine type, but with this prophylactic treatment.
This treatment that very feasibly right. can shorten the lifespan of the virus
exactly.
for people who are afflicted.
Right. And so and something, you know, and hopefully something like that. So with that permutation, you can see, okay, this is how we get things going again. And so I think there's this middle ground in there. But again, even with those things in place, you still got to do smart stuff, right, until we get out of this thing. And that is, you still got a social distance. And so I think there's a lot, you know, and watching, you know, spring break happen in various parts of the country, New Orleans is now incredibly impacted by, because, again, there's incredible pressure from the business community not to shut shit off, right? You're going to mm-hmm. shut shit off during Mardi Gras? I make 60% of my revenue.
Nailed it.
Right? I mean, come on, like, look. And so, you know, that's real. I mean, those are the people that give money to mayoral campaigns, right? If you fucking do this, you're going to kill us.
I mean, we saw it in Jaws, right?
Like, right.
Like, we all know what happens when you shut the beach down, right? And but
I can't believe you. I can't believe you went Jaws on me.
Oh man, I do love Jaws. I actually just watched it over the weekend again because I, you know, not much else to do. I've been watching a lot of old movies. But you know, it really is true though that. If here's effectively is what the problem is that especially in America, Americans do not like to be told what to do by the government by and large, right? And I would contend, as much as I love America, that the one freedom that we are the most rabid in defending is our freedom from inconvenience. You know, we are happy to give up elements of the First Amendment when people say things we don't like. We're happy to give up elements of the Second Amendment when people do things we don't like. I could go on through it, but if you tell Americans that we're going to stop streaming Netflix in HD, then they get really riled up. You know, if you tell Americans that you can't go to I'm blanking on the name of that music festival in California that got canceled recently. People get really upset.
Coachella.
Coachella, thank you. It's in part because a lot of us maintain this "it's not me" mentality. And I'm as guilty of it.
Well, they never had to, though, Alex. I mean, I was reading, I was listening to, I played a bunch of it, and you should listen to it. It's a book called The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailor. And I was playing it, and so it's about the Battle of Samar, and that is in Leyte Gulf. And essentially, the American 7th Fleet gets deceived. And Bull Halsey takes his carrier battle group and chases a Japanese carrier group that he wants to sink. And the Japanese did that deliberately. And behind that, they slide in the biggest battle group the Japanese Navy put together in World War II. But it was battleships and cruisers and destroyers in an attempt to descend on the landing at Luzon in the Philippines and annihilate it. Right? You had these guys in destroyers that turn around and drive into the Japanese. And they throw right hook after right hook after right hook. Their gunnery is incredible. Their torpedo shooting is incredible. And they save the landing. They save the rest of the battle group. And one guy is a guy named Ernest Evans. He commands a ship called the USS Johnston. He's awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously. But you read about these are kids that grew up in the Depression. They were born right after World War I. They grew up in the Depression, right? They joined the Navy, you know, and all these different individual stories, right? And that morning, right, the guy who's driving the aircraft who sees the Japanese fleet that's moving towards the Americans and says, "Hey, what's Third Fleet doing up here? Because there's not supposed to be any Japanese ships."
Oh, man.
And then he drops down, and then he looks, and he goes, "Those aren't American ships." And it's like, "Those are Japanese? There's no Japanese around here." And then he radios a report, and he gets told, "Can't be. Your eyes are deceiving you. Drop down." So he drops down from like 10,000 feet to like 1,500 feet and says, "Yeah, there's the biggest white flag I've ever seen with a red dot right in the middle of it. How's that for you?" Like, holy shit. And they're 20 miles away, already within gunnery range of the 16-inch guns of the Japanese, the biggest battleship on the planet at the time. And mm-hmm. and these guys turn their – these guys, you know, Evans says, bring it about 180. And everybody goes, holy shit. The guy in the plane says, I'm probably not going to have a flight deck to land on because these guys are going to annihilate these escort carriers and these destroyers and the couple cruisers that we have. This math is not good. And they turn into it. So it's just this stark contrast. And I know there's been memes that have been floating around like the greatest generation did this. You know, the 9/11 generation has been fighting for 20 years. But that's been less than 1% of the population, really. And now you're asked to stay at home and wash your hands. And this is something that is so inconvenient to Americans because really, I mean, we haven't been asked to sacrifice in the collective since when? World War II.
And I'd argue that culturally we're not very accepting of the idea of sacrifice.
Oh, fuck no.
You know?
Well, I will tell you this. I will tell you this, that I think that it takes a little bit of spark. And then, for instance, you know, I told my daughter, I said, okay, look, we're gonna PT twice as much. We're going to read books and listen to books. And we're going to volunteer. Okay? Now, I don't know how we can volunteer, if that means driving food to people or whatever. But we're going to volunteer because you can come out better on the far side of this whenever the hell that is, right? But you got to do certain things. And to quote
you know, and I love that part of that is your sense of community.
Because it's got to be. It's how we do it.
It's got to be. Exactly.
And my grandmother was saying, famous, and I've quoted her, you know, in the last couple of weeks, you know, Michael, when God closes a door, he opens a window. Always look for the window. And sometimes you might have to create your own window. But, I mean, I think, and then what are you teaching? You're teaching your kids at some future date, this is how you do it, right? I remember because I remember doing this with my dad in the great, you know, Wuhan flu epidemic of 2020. And that's how we got through it. And so,
speaking of that sense of community, I'd like to plug something real quick in case anybody's listening. Last week, Military Times had to furlough a large portion of their editorial staff as a result of the coronavirus. So there's a lot of journalists out there who were suddenly without work for the next few weeks or maybe even a few months. I'm going to sing the praises of my bosses, though, because I went to my bosses at Sandbox. Our parent company is Sandbox, which runs a letters service to basic training. And I said, like, a whole bunch of journalists, a whole bunch of writers, and a whole bunch of editors now in this very difficult time don't have an income anymore. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to get the executive team supported me and understood what I was saying and dumped a bunch more money into my freelance budget. So if there are any writers out there right now that have been furloughed from the Military Times or from other, you know, outlets in this same sphere that can speak to our audience, I've got a bunch of money in my freelance pool. I am looking to buy articles that I can publish now, a month from now, 2 months from now. I'm happy to build up a stockpile of articles that I can publish later and pay you for now, if it means the difference between you guys being able to pay to feed your family or not. So please reach out to me on Twitter, ahollinks52 on Twitter. I don't really want to put my email address out there publicly, but by all means, DM me or tweet at me and I'll get you my email address. If you're a writer or a journalist that works in this sphere and right now you're out of work, I'm fortunate that we are supported by product sales that pay our bills because ad sales right now are almost non-existent.
I was going to ask you, explain the revenue chain, because a lot of people would think
why people in the news right now would be out of business, right? That's a great question.
Well, I mean, because my thought is that, like, well, more people are at home, more people are reading, more people are on the internet. It would seem like there's greater demand for what you do.
You're totally right. There is a lot of demand for news media. The problem is that there's a couple of different revenue models, right, for news, right? And Military Times is run by really intelligent guys. I know a couple of them who they have a really diverse portfolio of, like, revenue in streams, right? But for the most part, when you're a website that runs news, you're going to get paid one of three ways. Either you're going to have subscription-based pay, which is it's a paywall, right? The Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, they have a paywall. So they're among the most insulated from drops in the market because they're getting paid directly from their audience, directly from the consumer. They're offering a product to the consumer and receiving money back for it.
Right.
The second form of revenue model, the second two forms really are both based on ad sales. One's based on click-throughs, one's based on ad impressions. Click-throughs are you make a certain amount of money every time someone clicks on the banner that you're paying to have on their ad. Ad impressions are you get paid a certain amount of money every time someone sees your ad on the page, right? So we track a lot of things like the amount of time a person spends on the page. Ad placement is critical because you're making sure that it's someplace where they're exposed to the ad. So if a person scrolls all the way to the bottom of an article on CNN, for instance, they might see 12 ads. They may not necessarily even realize they did, but they feasibly could have seen 12 ads throughout the whole page. But if they only scroll halfway down, they'll see 6 ads. If they don't scroll at all, they'll see 1, right? So these revenue models are how they pay their writers, their editors, the tech staff that keeps the website running, the people who go get coffee and everything in between, HR, accounting, all those people's pay comes from either subscriptions or ad revenue, right? So right now, a lot of companies are not particularly interested in buying ad revenue.
So even though demand for the product is up, I can't buy ads because
We call it ad inventory, right? So at Sandbox is a good example. Here's some inside baseball I probably shouldn't share with the world. But at Sandbox, I try really hard to minimize how many ads kind of jump into your face. And we have an ad inventory of around 3 million impressions per month. It's growing every day because we're growing every day, which is great. But it's pretty safe to say that we could sell about 3 million impressions per month without breaking a sweat, right? And there are some companies out there that are doing well revenue-wise during the situation, or they're insulated enough that they're able to still buy ad space. You know, some companies that are government contractors or are government agencies, some companies that are online-based companies that are doing very well right now, like Amazon, might be interested in buying ad space on the New York Times, right? But a lot of companies right now are worried, right? The same way we are, right? So the people running these companies go, in Q2, our revenue streams might be cut in half if everybody's not allowed to go outside. If no one can go to the movies, Hollywood loses a lot of money. So those Hollywood movies are less eager to buy ad space on people's websites. And on television, I'm sure, you know, because if they're worried that how much money they're going to make is going to be cut in half, then they're now trying to make plans to spend half so that they don't end up upside down, right? So outlets like the Military Times, through no fault of their own, effectively, a lot of their revenue comes from print publications, a lot of the revenue comes from public events, and a lot of the revenue does come from ad spend. But they're looking at trying to make sure that they're positioned to rebound on the other side of this when companies are reeling back on what they're spending, right?
Got it.
So I really do have the utmost respect for the guys over at Military Times and for the writing and the work that they do. I've already had a bunch of them reach out. I'm really excited about buying pieces from them. But that's a thing that I'm able to do because Sandbox is doing pretty well right now. But everybody has a thing that you're able to do. You know, you can help out, like Max said, by volunteering to help distribute food to the elderly. You can help out, as silly as it sounds, by continuing to order food from your favorite restaurants, you know. Things like that that keep money moving within your local economy or your industry can really help.
And it's going to spawn questions like, Daddy, why are we eating out so much?
It totally has. My daughter has already asked. You're totally right. You know, and I told my daughter, which I have to say, big shout out to Papa Gino's, who I ordered from this weekend. And we ordered out 3 times in like the last 4 days. But the Papa Gino's delivery driver, you know, he took the pizzas out of like the hot sack that they have, laid the sack down on my porch, put the pizzas on top of the sack with the receipt for me to sign, backed away 10 steps, and then texted and said, hey, you can come out and grab your pizza, because he's worried about keeping himself safe. He's worried about keeping me safe. But they're still running for business, and they're relying on us for their paychecks. You know, we're all worried about whether our paychecks will come. Everybody else is worried too. So if your paycheck is still coming, if you are still making money and you're able to spend it in your local economy, by all means, I understand ordering stuff off Amazon. It's convenient, even with like 5 days instead of 2 for Prime. It's still nice. But don't forget that there are a lot of local companies that deliver. You can also use things like Postmates and DoorDash and Grubhub to support local businesses. Even if it's a chain, bear in mind that there are people who paid money to the chain, but they still own that building.
Yeah, but again, the people who operate the chain or in your community are members of your community. So
exactly, you're totally right.
I went to Colleen and I. We went to McDonald's last night, and I was kind of curious to see how the drive-through would work. Right, so I got there and it worked the same as it always does, and so I handed my card to the girl and she swipes it, and I said, How are you staying safe? I thought you'd have like a terminal that I would kind of plug my card into, kind of like the way they do at the counter. And then I would, you know, if I have a PIN, I would type in my PIN. And she said, no, we haven't gone to that yet. She said, we just wash everything all the time. She said, well, you know, we've gotten good at it. I don't, you know, I hand you stuff, so that's okay. I stand back from the window more. And then I wash my hands and I wash the places that I touch here. Like every 10 minutes. And I said, all right, that works. And she, you know, I just wondered, you know, but again, all those people, right, have their own bills to pay. And like everybody else around the country wondering, you know, okay, like I can fake it for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, which bills don't I pay? Do I not pay the electric bill? Do I not pay the gas bill? Do I not pay my cell phone bill?
You know, and it's worth bearing in mind that when you don't pay it this month, it's not that you missed a bill this month. It's that next month you have twice as much of a bill. You know, when it comes to things like electricity, water, internet access, when you don't pay your bill that month, it just compounds, right. You know, and then we'll run into people who maybe they start working again in 3 months, but they are so far down the debt hole.
Right. And that's what we're talking about, the economy. And so the federal government's going to give me $1,200. Well, you know, I mean, thank you. But
we also have to be cognizant of the fact that the federal government doesn't have any money that we don't give them.
Right. But I'm $4,000, right? And what I was making was enough to pay my bills and a little bit extra.
I was paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
And
now
you gave me a half a paycheck.
I somehow or other got to come up with an extra $4,000, you know, because of this national quarantine. And so you can see why that all of us have – if we're going to spend our money, anything we can do to keep, you know, local businesses and, as Alex said, to keep people employed is important. And again, you know, to relate this back to the country hasn't faced anything like this, I want to say, since World War II in the collective, even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which a friend of mine told me was the scariest thing he's ever seen in his life. He said, look, we didn't know. You know, here the United States and the Soviet Union are squaring off, ready to shoot, you know, nuclear missiles at each other. And it was terrifying. But beyond that, you go back to World War II, and then before that, you go back to the Depression and things like the Dust Bowl. And I was looking at that famous picture from the Dust Bowl of that woman with three little kids, one she's holding, one's on her left and one's on her right. And she's sitting in a lean-to on a wooden crate, right? You know, this country's been through some rough stuff. It'll get through, right? But we haven't been reminded of that lesson in decades.
And I think you're totally right.
Yeah. And so it's a lot of I saw a public service announcement that Governor Cuomo played this morning in his little press conference. I didn't hear the audio, but it was Danny DeVito telling people to say, hey, look, you know, be smart. If you're not in the target audience, right, you can be a carrier. And so sit at home, watch a little TV, you know. And so, you know, now you're starting to see, you know, us trying to communicate in different ways as opposed to just bitching at people, you know, get people that influence other people. But again, this sensitizing everybody to the collective. You know, we can help. And there's so many people that are doing cool things in their community. I called up, you know, looking to volunteer. I called up Meals on Wheels on Friday. They only deliver between 9 and 11, and I'm doing my show right now. And so I'm going to find a way to plug into this shit, right? And the most beautiful thing about it is that if I can take Colleen, Colleen's going to see a side of the community she doesn't normally see. And that means we're going to have conversations that we don't normally have. right? Don't ever forget that these people are here every day and that they always need our help, right? And it will change. Like, you can lecture your kids till you're blue in the face, but when you pull the curtain back and you show them, it will fundamentally change their lives. Like, you know, this is dash four that we have in our family, and that's how the other three have been impacted in their lives. And so I mean, there's, as Alex said, I mean, there's ways that we can all help, and we all need to do that. But again, I don't think about when we've been impacted by a nation as a nation, and it's been, you know, World War II, I think.
I think you're totally right. I have one more thing that I'm going to add to our soapbox lecturing about things we can be doing for our community. One of the bigger ones is, don't hoard stuff, guys. I'm a prepper. Like, I admit it. Like, you know, when we learned that there might be a shelter at home. Oh man, I'm not like. I guess I would say I would never call myself a prepper, but I've been accused of it by others. Is that kind of fair to say?
You might be a prepper if.
If, yeah, other people call you one, right?
Right.
So, in part because I ran a website that was all about survival and tactical gear. So, I have, Lord knows, a garage full of survival and tactical gear I've been given for reviews. But I always had 3 or 4 days worth of food and a couple of days worth of water in my basement just because I'm crazy, you know? I totally understand the urge to provide for your family and that feeling where you go, well, if I don't go buy 20 packs of toilet paper, my family might not have any, and then we're wiping our asses with T-shirts next week. I understand your concerns. But let's remember that the people who are at most risk here are also the people who cannot fight their way through the aisle to get some toilet paper. They're also the people who might not be that savvy on the computer to buy it from you for gouged prices on Facebook. They're also the people who might not have that much money to begin with because they're on a fixed income. Because they're 84 living alone on their pension, you know? Let's remember that the people who are at most risk here are often the people who aren't able to fight you for things at the store or outbid you for things online. So let's keep that in mind. Let's buy the stuff that we do need for our family. Let's remember that Walmart will still be there next week. Get what you need for your family, but don't hoard things so that you can sell it for a profit. Don't fight with people at the store, especially older folks that are just trying to get the stuff that they need. Let's remember that we're all in this together. That's like, I think what Mac is saying about volunteering, I'm embarrassed that hadn't crossed my mind myself, because what a great idea. Let's remember that at the end of the day, we're all Americans, and we want America to be healthy, and we want America's economy to bounce back to where it was 6 weeks ago by next year. Right? We can do it. It's entirely feasible. But it means washing your hands, social distancing, not granting yourself the opportunity to get it, not granting others the opportunity to catch it from you. And it means, like we're saying, shop at your local businesses. You don't have to go into your bunker and like hit the lock code and come out in 6 months. You definitely can maintain some semblance of life. In fact, it's even better if you do, because it helps your local economy not die. It helps small stores not close. But be responsible about the way you do it. Think about what you're doing. And this will be over sooner than it would be if we kind of stayed selfish about it.
Yeah, no, let me tell you, there's ways to get through it. And all you got to do is, like I said, I was listening to this thing called The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailor. And the lives that they lived. One of the guys who's a bosun, the chief bosun mate on the USS Johnston that sunk and led by this guy named Evans, he grew up in foster homes, joins the Navy at 17, right? His first job was the Civilian Conservation Corps when he was 16, you know, working in those camps around the country. And then as soon as he could, he signed up to join the Navy. And you think about that life, right? In the Depression, I don't have a family. And, you know, and so, you know, the country faces challenges, and, you know, it's sad that we have to relearn this. We wish it would be a different way, but this is the way of the world. And so look for the window, right? Look for the window, as my grandmother would say.
The world's not ending, guys.
No, it's not. What about? What are you guys writing about? Does this dominate the website?
It kind of does. Up until recently, I was doing my best to not focus a ton of content on the coronavirus because I think it's important that people continue to have access to news about what else is going on, right?
Right.
But as of late, we've shifted a lot of our content towards the coronavirus because there's so much more to stay abreast of, you know? So I have three posts that are actively revolving with updates. One of them is how to get tested if you're in the VA medical program or if you're a TRICARE recipient. I have and we're rolling updates with that as they change their testing parameters. I have another post that's all about how they're changing basic training to address issues with the coronavirus. It talks primarily about parents and family members. If you can no longer go to graduation, here's what you need to know about it. Here's where you can still see your loved ones graduate. So that's updating on a daily basis. And then I have another one that's got DOD guidelines and advice and guidance on how to stay safe, how to keep your family safe, and how to be responsible while this is all going on. But we've also got a ton of other content that's a little bit more lighthearted. We've got a post going up later today that's just about 80s military movies that are worth going back to now that you're stuck in your house, in part motivated by the marathon of movies that my family and I have been watching for the last week. You know, we're going to have content.
Name a couple.
Oh, man. Well, one of my favorites, of course, is Red Dawn, you know. but honestly, Aliens is one of my favorite military movies. Space Marines fighting aliens is such an awesome – you should just watch that movie once a month anyway just to stay cool. but there are a ton of the 80s. I mean, Top Gun, you know, the 80s were a great time for military movies.
Come on, Full Metal Jacket. Really?
Full Metal Jacket, although I would argue only kind of the first half. Second half of Full Metal Jacket starts to get real boring.
It's weird. It gets – yeah, it's social commentary and Vietnam War stuff. But no. I don't disagree with you.
But I also – I have a new piece up this morning by a guy named the Odyssean. He worked in the Air Force and in the Army as intelligence and then did a lot of private intelligence contracting for the American government. So he writes under a pseudonym. But – he's a brilliant guy, and he wrote an article over the weekend that we just published about the U.S. Code of Laws that basically dictates how our military and homeland security apparatus functions. And I know that sounds dry, but he explained it in a way that even I could follow and was pretty funny. So if you want to learn stuff, come by sandboxnews.com. If you want to stay updated on the coronavirus, swing by. We are only publishing updates as they revolve around officials giving news. You're not going to get any rumors from us. You're not going to get any op-eds about how bad something must be or how good something else. All we're giving when it comes to coronavirus-related news is we're relaying what our government, the CDC, the defense apparatus, the executive branch, what these people are trying to relay to the public. We're getting that stuff out to you in consolidated chunks. We're at one-stop shops. You can get all of it, so you won't get any sensationalism from us. But you will also get some good education, a little bit of edutainment, I guess, if you will. If you're looking for a way to escape all this stress, we've got stuff for you too. You know, whether it's lists of movies or it's just good ideas for things to write about in your journal or ways to stay busy in your house, Sandbox News has got you for that as well. So please swing by sandboxnews.com and check out what we've got. And we won't let you down in the middle of all this. I promise.
You know, to one of the things you said, you know, there's going to be plenty of time to do the post-mortem on this, right? And to ask the serious questions that need to be asked. Why was South Korea so much better, right, positioned to take this on their public health system than the American public health system? What decisions did South Korea make? You know, all the questions, you know, why don't we have, you know, which and that posturing led them to be able to do a lot of testing.
There's a lot we can glean from that, but we also right now I agree with you. Our focus has got to be on what can we do today to make tomorrow better.
You got to kill the beast first. So to me, and I think I appreciate that because, you know, I uninstalled two different apps on my phone simply because I got tired of the cacophony of, in my opinion, bullshit that is designed to be clickbait. Right. That is hysterical.
Are the best way to get someone to click.
Right. And so to me, I just got like, God, every time I read this, I almost wince physically like, oh, really? Like, you know, the whole Chicken Little thing. So I uninstalled that stuff. I don't need that. you know, and so I appreciate that approach to it, you know, a more grown up, a more responsible, and, you know, and again, the problem is, you know, the people that make all the money are the most shrill, right? It just yes. pisses me off. And it's that way in talk radio. It's that way in.
If you pick a team, it's a lot easier to find an audience,
right.
you know?
Right.
And if you can really piss people off, it's a lot easier to go viral.
Right. There you go. The two words everybody wants to hear, go viral.
Yeah.
Or even better, went viral.
Went viral. Exactly.
Now, let me just, I'm going to ask you a couple of pop culture questions. I'm going to ask you one, and I'm going to see how many that you can name.
Oh, God. I'm going to be bad at this. No, I'm already sure. Okay, I'm ready.
The most viewed videos on YouTube in history.
Most viewed in history.
Yeah. Name all. I have the top 10. Tell me. I want to see how many you can name of the top 10.
Oh, man, maybe none. I want to say a Justin Bieber music video has got to be on there because he was big on YouTube before he was famous, right? I want to say there will be at least one Justin Bieber video, maybe Gangnam Style. I don't know. I mean, I know it was huge for a little while.
Justin Bieber's number 8. The video's entitled Sorry from 2015.
You know, actually, there was a really good mashup of a Justin Bieber, I don't know which song, and a Slipknot song a couple of years ago that should replace the Justin Bieber one.
Gangnam Style is number 7, and at 3.
Oh, I did get on. All right.
Yeah, 3.55 billion views.
That's a mind blower, you know? I want you guys to know that I was able to name 2 of the top 10 YouTube videos.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
I couldn't name very many Nobel laureates, if you ask me.
Number 1, I'd never heard of, Colleen Hatt. It's a song called Despacito, featuring Luis Fonsi, or it's by Luis Fonsi, featuring Daddy Yankee. 6.68 billion views.
You know what's crazy about that is that I've even heard of it a number of times and had no idea what it was. So maybe I need to go watch this video,
should,
I guess.
Hey,
it must be pretty good.
It has to be, right? I watched it. It's good. It's good.
There's, all right. I'll have
the number 2, Baby Shark Dance.
Now, I'd be willing to bet at least half of those views were in my house. My daughter absolutely loves Baby Shark.
Pink Fong Kids Songs and Story, 4.85 billion views. Number 3.
I actually have a conspiracy theory about Pink Fong because it's a Chinese outlet, I'm pretty sure.
Oh my God.
But I'll spare you.
Number 3, Shape of You by Ed Sheeran has 4.7. See You Again, Wiz Khalifa, 4.5.
Yeah, that was the Paul Walker song. I remember when that was a really big deal.
Number 6, Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars.
Another one my daughter loves. We're responsible for some of those.
There you go. And then Gangnam Style and Justin Bieber. And then Maroon 5 does a song called Sugar where they, in the video, they go to all these different weddings. It's a pretty cool video if you've never seen it.
I know. My daughter has a weird my wife has a crush on the lead singer of Maroon 5, but my daughter has adopted it.
Really?
So unfortunately, I'm familiar with
it. I will say this, though. It's a pretty cool video. If you've never seen it.
It is. It is.
The concept is Maroon 5 shows up, and they tend to be behind this curtain at the reception. And you can see the bride and the groom. One of them's in on it. I think most of them are grooms in the music industry. And, you know, you can see this kind of hesitation and this like what's going on here. And then they drop this curtain and here's Adam Levine, who, you know, is a big idol in your house. And they start singing and the place goes crazy. And they do this, I don't know, maybe a half dozen times on a given Saturday. And so that's what
I always joke about it when we watch that video, that if Maroon 5 were to show up and play my wedding, I would have no idea who they were.
Who are these? Who are these losers and who let them in?
That just came out.
Right. And could you sing something good? And your wife just all of a sudden just like looks at you and says, just shut up.
Metallica or...
Exactly. And then number 10, Katy Perry has a song called Roar at only 3 billion views. I mean, that's amazing.
Now's a good time to remind
So see
world.
Now you can
writer for like 5 years and have got like if you were to put all of the views everything I've written together, it would be nowhere near Katy Perry's YouTube Roar.
How humbling is that, right?
Right?
Exactly.
Seriously.
No, but I mean, the things you do when there's nothing else to do. So we watched music videos the other night. It was like we took turns after we played board games, and we had pizza, we had Chick-fil-A ice cream. So here's another, you know, if you never had Chick-fil-A ice cream, you're robbing yourself of one of the great, you know, culinary delights on the planet.
This is a thing I'm going to have to try. Here's another local business that I can use DoorDash or Grubhub.
Check it out. I'm telling you.
I never used any of those apps before because I'm like, I feel the same way about them as I do about Uber. It feels like murderer delivery, but I'm trying to step outside my comfort zone here.
That's good. That's good. So we watched music videos the other night. We did it again last night too because I was Ed Sheeran binge watching on videos.
We watch a lot of music videos, but I do have to this is going to be the oldest guy sounding thing I've ever said on the show. A lot of new music videos from young female singers are pretty scantily clad, I guess. There's a lot of naked people in videos now, it seems, and a lot of like simulated sex acts. So my daughter's two, you know, so I'm always like, you know, what do you say we skip this one?
Yeah,
let's not watch Cardi B. We jump back to something different.
Cardi B, again, I'm 62. I'll say this for her. She does some funny shit. She does some pretty raunchy shit. But she put out some kind of video last week, and like the headline was this: "To the boys in the Pentagon." And she's like, she looks and she says, "Could somebody tell me what's going on? Could somebody help a bitch out?" And you. Right, and you see it, and you start laughing because it's so stupid. But yeah, that would be a trend that I would tell you is, Despacito. You might want to
skip that one with my daughter.
Well, no, everybody's got their clothes on and stuff, but there's part of it is there's an absolutely stunning woman in it. I was like, Colleen, like, who's that? She looks at me and she said, "Really?" I'm like, "Well, I'm just asking." And it's like human curiosity.
That's the question.
Anything that's at that beyond what's normal, somebody should say, "Who is that?" She's like, "Whatever." So
I feel like that's exactly how my wife would respond.
Right. No, whatever. But Colleen, working out with free weights twice, four times a week now.
Good on her. I like, especially during my training days. This can be my parting shot in the middle of this quarantine. If you're working out as a woman in quarantine, weights are good for you. You're not going to get bulky. I promise you, as a fairly bulky guy, it took me like a decade to get bulky. It is really hard to be bulky. Working out with free weights is really, really good for anybody, male or female. It's a great way to burn calories. It's a great way to increase your physical strength. You don't have to move a ton of weight, and you're not going to square up. You know, there are a lot of the most beautiful women that you see on TV that you think of as very feminine work out with weights.
Right.
So
right.
Please, ladies, understand that weights are good for you too.
Well, you know, the other thing I noticed, and so the first time we worked out, so we turned the treadmill on to about 8 miles an hour. And then so we warm up. And then between sets, you get on the treadmill and you sprint for 30 seconds. Right. So, and the thing's hauling.
I did this on active duty, but I'm afraid if I tried now, I'd die.
This thing's hauling ass. So you gotta hop on and you go. And so we got ready to do bench, and she says, "I can't lift the bar." I said, "Bullshit." She said, "I said, get down there." So, things that you learn, right? So they taught her like, for a woman, you should bring the bar down between your breasts and your belly button. And so she's trying to do this. And I said, "Colleen, that's, you can't do that. You can't, you know, it's hard to do that. I mean, look, you don't need to, first of all, you're not supposed to bounce the bar off your chest to begin with.
Especially at that point, it's like your floating ribs, which do not have as much support.
Plus, it's an unnatural movement. That's not the movement. To try to go like out or away, lower down your body and then push up. I said, so look, take it. The bar is under control. It comes straight down to your chest. You don't bounce it. And then you push, you blow out and you push up.
I will say, if she struggles, especially with that last portion, You know, because a lot of people, depending on how long your arms are, there isn't really a muscle group meant for the movement from like arms at 90 degrees down to your sternum and up there. For right. some of us, for me, for instance, 90 degrees isn't that far from my chest.
Right.
You know, but if you have to dip significantly below 90 degrees, it might be worth just trying, just dip to around 90, you know, and stop in air.
But well, guess so. She pumped out 9 of them yesterday.
Good for, that's awesome. Right? That's fantastic.
And I said, look, you all this stuff you can conquer. And she's a slender girl. I said, look, if you do this for a month, you're going to look like Hercules. I promise you.
I'm telling you, it really does. And you, especially with weight training, you get a lot of results in a fairly short period of time as compared to some other workout regimens. You know, like if you started jogging a mile every day, jogging doesn't tend to tighten you up all that much. It's great for burning calories, but you might not look different at the end of 2 weeks. You start lifting weights, you're going to look and feel different right. at the end of 2 weeks.
Right, especially you know? If you're a 16-year-old girl and you're rather slender. And then the response I got was, yeah, what's up? And I said, okay, look.
I love it.
I said, the next time you did it to me, I'm going to knock your ass out, okay? So be very careful. So anyway. All right, Alex, tell everybody where they find your work.
Well, you can make sure to find my stuff every day on sandboxnews.com. If you want to find me on social media, check me out on ahollings52 on Twitter or Alex Hollings Writer on Facebook, facebook.com/AlexHollingsWriter. And also, once again, if you are a writer who's been furloughed, please feel free to reach out to me. Let's see if we can work something out where I'll buy a few pieces from you, maybe help keep your phone bill paid. And just for fun, I started a new Instagram account over the weekend called Busted Knuckles Builds, which just follows all the weird things that I'm building so I can stop spamming it on my journalist channels.
Oh.
So if you're tired of seeing me make knives and shields and dumb stuff in my garage, you won't have to anymore. But if you like that stuff, check out Busted Knuckles Builds on Instagram. There's nothing professional about it. It's just me posting pictures of the weird stuff I'm making.
Okay, Busted Knuckles, all one word?
Yeah, all one word, Busted Knuckles Builds. You got it.
All right, but first of all, I just want to, I think oftentimes you judge people on the unselfish things they do when there's a lot of pressure on in life. And I think whether you're a leader in the Marine Corps or you're a leader in your community, you know, watch what somebody does when there's pressure on them. You know, do they get inwardly focused then, you know, and stop doing the things that they really get paid to do, especially in times like this, or do they step up? And obviously you and Sandbox, your instinct to go to them and say, hey, would you help me so we could help them? Good on you guys, Alex, and God bless you guys for doing that. Very proud.
Thank you.
No, very proud of you guys. And cause that's, one of the things I was talking about last week was, you know, you shut the economy down like this, like, am I going to get evicted? Right? I mean,
yeah.
And you know, we know what percentage of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. And now you're going to talk about this going on for a couple months? What happens to me? What happens to my family? What do I do? Right? And so you're hopefully mitigating some of that for some people. So well done.
Thank you. Thank you. And likewise, you know, I think that the more people that think about things this way, that look at things like we're in this together, I think the better off we're going to be in the end. And honestly, I know that we live in kind of a selfish culture, but I think maybe we do because we've been so comfortable for so long. And this might be kind of that catalyst, that impetus for change that shows us that we should be looking out for each other. And if that good can come of this, you know, it's all we're stuck with the bad either way. But let's start doing things like Mac is saying right now that can make us come out of this stronger and better than we were when it started.
And the other thing is we've got to put people back to work. I mean, we can't.
You're right.
Because let me tell you, if you gave me if you looked at me and said, okay, look, these are your choices, right? You're either going to stay at home and you're going to get through this, you know, but I don't know if I can overcome, you know, not paying my rent for 2 months and not paying my phone bill. How do I get out of that hole? Or you can go to work and roll the dice. I would say, you know, if I'm a healthy guy in my 30s, 40s, or 50s, I'll go to work, man. It's not even close.
Wash your hands, guys.
Right.
Social distancing and wash your hands, and you will be – don't get me – it doesn't make it impossible. But if you wash your hands, maintain social distancing, you can do the stuff that you would normally do. You can go to work. You know, once your state tells you that you can, or whoever, you know, your employer tells you that you can, just remember that when we get back to work, we still got to be careful, just like Max said. And if we're careful and respect one another, you know, that the end outcome of this will be, it'll be less time wasted thrown away. It'll be less money wasted and thrown away, and there'll be fewer lives wasted and thrown away. If we can just each individually wash our hands, maintain social distancing. Right now, maybe limit when you go out. Don't go to parties and don't go to the club, but go to work, you know, if you're able. And if you're not able to go to work, but you're working from home, you know, be mindful of output there too, because ultimately, you know, you need your company to survive this the same way you need your family to survive this, because at the end, your family's there to support you and your company's there to pay your bills. We need both to get through this.
Well said.
If you're working from home, work your ass off. If you're going to work, do it safely and work your ass off. And eventually this is all going to get better.
All right, man. Good luck. We'll talk to you.
Hey, you too, man. Thanks for having me.
No. Always a pleasure. That is Alex Hollings here on a Monday. That'll do it. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Seriously. In hour one, you're going to hear some incredible stuff. And I was working in my backyard over the weekend, and I was listening to an audiobook called Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. And it's a great listen. And but you've heard us talk about the Battle of Samar and Captain Ernest Evans and the USS Johnson. The story's better. The story's way better. And so I play, I don't know, maybe 30 minutes of it in hour one. Ernest Evans wanted to be a Marine. And he fights the USS Johnson like a Marine. Yeah, like he's got a bayonet, you know, attached to the front of his destroyer. Yeah, no shit. But the story of how they get there is inspiring. And so don't touch that dial. I listened to it on Audiology. I think that's what they call it. No, that's where you go get your ears tested, right? I listened to it on Audible. Audible. Which is an Amazon company, in case you don't know. But, yeah, you can buy it there, download it. So, anyhow. Tomorrow, I think Grant Newsham's going to come on sometime this week. A friend of mine, who used to be director of public health, a guy named Don Shields, he's going to come on this week. And then I think that... We might roll Jack Riley to Monday, but Jack Riley's going to come on at some point. So, yeah. So, and then you heard Tim and Jeff on Thursday, and so should be good. Anyway, continued good luck to everybody. Take care of each other. Look to see, and I haven't been able to do it yet, look to find a place to volunteer to help other people, right? And if you can, take, you know, if you have teenage kids that, you know, can pass for 18, take them with you, because you'll change their life and the way they look at your community and their role in it and all of that, which is all good stuff, which is the best you can do in these circumstances. So anyway, on a Monday, All Marine Radio, over and out. Stay tuned for Ernest Evans and the sailors of the USS Johnston. It's an awesome story.